You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
You see, the word blindness is an emotion-packed word. It's very scary because, unfortunately, the stereotype is that blindness is associated with helplessness and sexlessness.
Longtime advocate for the blind, Rose Resnick. Today on Now I've Heard Everything, I'm Bill Thompson. Rose Resnick was a talented and successful concert pianist. She also played at clubs, and she performed on the radio in the 1930s. She even taught music. But Rose Resnick was also blind. As a child, she had lost her vision to glaucoma. But over the course of her many decades, Rose Resnick became a strong and powerful advocate for the blind and visually impaired. She established the California League of the Handicapped, and she created or worked with several other organizations for the blind and visually handicapped. I met her in 1988 when we talked about her autobiography, one of her two autobiographies actually, a book called Dare to Dream. And when I came back to this interview recently, I realized that it means a lot more to me now than it did in 1988 because since then, I've been diagnosed with glaucoma and I've lost much of my vision, although I still have some left. So here now, from 1988, Rose Resnick.
Do you find that people will come to concentrate on the fact that you are a blind person? And do you find it condescending when people say, oh, my goodness, how much you've been able to accomplish despite your handicap?
I do. And it's a very important point you make because actually, you see, the word blindness is an emotion-packed word. It's very scary to people. It's very repelling, the thought of it, because unfortunately, the stereotype is that blindness is associated with helplessness and sexlessness and lots of things that we don't like and that we're afraid of and are repelled by. I would hope that what my book would do would be to dispel some of these stereotypes and make people realize that even though you go through life without being able to see, that there are many ways of seeing besides looking with your eyes. I mean, you see with your, when you cannot see, you see with your ears, you see with your fingers, a lot of stuff. And, when I go traveling, first thing I do is go to a museum to see some of the things that I wouldn't be able to see, but I can touch. And I feel very much in touch with life and the objective world through my other senses, you see. And so I would hope that people would come away feeling, gosh, you can live even without seeing, the human potential is that you can live a normal and even exciting life.
In this enlightened day and age, does it surprise you that we are not more more open-minded and more tolerant, or more, and tolerant isn't even the right word, I guess, that we don't know more about blindness?
Well, it is surprising, although I think I have a sort of optimistic view because of television, which shows people without sight, you know, doing the kinds of things that people see, running and swimming and jumping out of planes, skydiving and participating in sports, and talks about their achievements now that we have talking computers and talking calculators. I have a friend in the East who says she's got a thing she sticks when she's making turkey, roasting turkey. She sticks it in the turkey and it says, come and get it when it's done, you know? So we have all these lovely talking things now that really bring us much closer to in the world of work. You know, the jobs that you can find today for people without sight are so much more than ever before because of this access to the printed word.
The microchip has really helped a lot, hasn't it?
Tremendously, just tremendously.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of things, as you were mentioning, the talking, and the speech is getting so refined on some of these machines,
it's
scary.
It's scary, that's right. Yes, it can talk very plainly to you and tell you that you're not doing the right thing.
That's right.
It wants to. I have a talking computer in my office. It's an IBM XT, and I just love it.
First time I rented a car, and it told me, your door is ajar.
Yeah.
Your door is ajar.
I know. It's a little inferior making.
That's right. You begin to wonder, where is that coming from? How do they know?
Right. They know too much.
That's right.
Really. But it's wonderful.
What kind of people must you counsel and help along and deal with
at our center?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the Rose Resnick Center in San Francisco, we have a big staff. For us, it's a big staff. I mean, for IBM, it'd be very minuscule. But we have 10 full-time people, and we have about 7 part-time people.
You're nonprofit, I presume.
Nonprofit, yeah. Nonprofit and private. And the kind of counseling that is called on, we do a lot of counseling for people who are on the process of losing their vision. That's where the greatest number of problems come in these days. Rather than genetic blindness, it's people in the older age category that are losing their sight. It's bad enough to be old, but then when you're losing your sight at that time of life, it's very traumatic. And so we do a lot of adjustment training, what we call adjustment training, which is actually teaching people to use their other senses to compensate. For instance, to go to your stove and to be able to turn that little dial on to where you want it, 300 or 400. Now, instead of looking, you put a little tape, just pieces of tape around there, and you can tell by touch, of course. And many other adaptive aids that we have. There are lots of things today that make people able to see a little bit more than they could before they had these nice little inventions. Magnifiers, for example. Now, I'm wearing an old-fashioned watch, Bill, which you have to touch to find out the time, but which today you'd have a talking watch. I had one, but I changed it for a talking clock because I didn't want to, in the middle of a meeting, to come out and say, 1:30, you know, that gravelly voice. But I like my little quiet watch. I can just open the lid and shove it up and just touch the hands, and then I can tell what time it is without interrupting the meeting. But we do teach about adaptive aids. We put them in touch with community resources that they may need, such as knowledge of legal aid or housing or medical aid or where to get this, that, and the other kind of an adaptive aid, or how to get talking books. You know, the most wonderful thing I think the United States government does for people with vision loss is the library services. They're absolutely free, and the books come free in the mail. We have the franking privileges. I know Mr. Reagan wanted to take that away from us, but we all sat up and screamed, and he didn't do it, couldn't do it. You wouldn't let him do it. So I hope we'll never, never have to give up our franking privileges, because our Braille books might take 10 volumes for one of your short books. And if we had to pay on those 10 volumes to go through the mail, we'd all grow up very ignorant, I'm afraid.
After this short break, Rose Resnick answers the question, is there anything good about being blind?
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 1988 conversation with Rose Resnick.
An issue that has come up in recent months, and that is whether blind people should be allowed to be seated at near emergency exits on airplanes.
Yeah, that has caused a lot of diverging opinions. I personally would not be among the ones who insist upon that this is an infringement of a person's right. You know, I think we ought to acknowledge some of the ways in which we actually have got a handicap and just come right out and admit it, that, you know, maybe we wouldn't be able to get down that slide too easily, or know where it was, or what would we do when we got to the bottom of the slide? How do I know where to go when I get out there? I don't insist. I understand the airline's point of view.
You know, my fear would be if I were sightless, my fear would be if I were not sitting next to the emergency exit, that everybody be in such a hurry to get to the emergency exit, they'd forget about me and I wouldn't be able to find my way.
Oh, I'd just grab onto somebody's back tail or their belt or something. And people are wonderful that way. And the stewardesses would be very good. And I mean, what's going to be is going to be anyhow. And you just use your resources as best. But anybody can get down the slide. I think you might find your way out of the plane okay, but what do you do after you get down there?
Is there any advantage at all at times to being blind?
Well, the only advantage I can think of is that you only the nicest people get to be your friends. Because a lot of people think, I don't want to be bothered, because they'd always be after, maybe they need me to do things for them, and they stay away from you. But you wind up with rather, at least that's my experience, with such superior and wonderful people who whom you select, and I hope they select for the same reasons that anybody else would, because of compatibility of taste and values and that kind of thing. That's how we select friends. But at the same time, somehow, they seem to be, I don't know, my experience has been, I just consider people I know pretty special. If that's the way, if, I don't know whether that's just my point of view, but there are not too many ways in which it is an advantage. Perhaps people say sentimentally that you develop your other senses more. Well, that's only because we have to. It isn't that we're born with better hearing or better sense of touch, but when you use it, you know, they say what you don't use, you lose. And the reverse is true. As you use your other senses, they become strengthened.
That's true.
More acute.
You've had a very, very rewarding life. I gather that the tone of your book is so encouraging.
Well, thank you. I have had a very interesting life, but I think most people have interesting lives. I've had my share of excitement and sadness, too. I had a few bad blows, but again, everybody has a few bad blows. I think that they kind of go around to everybody once, sooner or later.
If you can tell me without giving away the ending of the book, what does the title mean?
Well, I called it Dare to Dream because I've had a couple of dreams, and funny, when I had them, the ideas, that is, I didn't think of them as something just absolutely impossible, but looking back, you wonder, you know, how did you do it? And I've look around me and conjure up the kinds of challenges that people have, and a lot of people want to do things and may not have the courage to conceive of an ambition of one sort or another, but have an overpowering idea of something they really think would be good to have happen. And I just wanted to be a little encouraging about that and just say, go ahead and spin out a little fantasy of one sort or another and stick to it and work hard, and you don't know. It just probably can come to pass.
Rose Resnick died in 2006 at the age of 99. Now, you can get a copy of Dare to Dream by Rose Resnick by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. Now, we may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. While you're at heardeverything.com, don't miss my 1998 interview with another strong advocate for the blind, Stephen Cusisto.
I live in this sea of color. It's like lying in an ice cave on your back and staring up through the layers of ice at the sun, or living inside a Jackson Pollock drip painting. I live in this tidal wash of color that makes no sense.
And my 1987 interview with a very famous woman who gave much of her life to helping the disabled because of her own two children's disabilities. My 1987 conversation with opera singer Beverly Sills.
I think my mother felt it was a kind of grim future in that there was nothing else for this poor little fat three-year-old. And she introduced me to the joy of opera, really, and I was hooked.
And, of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, we'll go back to the 1960s, and we'll revisit my 1988 interview with former radical turned California state legislator Tom Hayden.
Millions of people don't feel that government speaks for them. And when the gap between government and dissatisfied people gets too great, then you begin to have the conditions for breakdown like the 60s.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.